you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station. The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
I don't know what's going on with any of it.
Afternoons on the Score.
This hour on 670 The Score is brought to you by the NV5 Invitational, July 25th through 28th at the Glen Club. It's Matt Spiegel here with you, along with Ryan McGuffey on 670 The Score. Guff trying to get in and utilize the Holmes maneuver, which I believe is his own maneuver. So it goes as one team trails and one team gets going. It's an interesting time in the baseball calendar, as we were talking about. Hoping to talk to Jonathan Papelbon coming up here in a little bit, and we'll let you know if we do. But in the meantime, Guff, the psyche of a player, like we were talking about with Kopech, like banking on the psyche of somebody is obviously the most difficult part of scouting in any sport. I think about it a lot, thought about it a lot in the last, 9 years as we've broken down quarterback after quarterback after quarterback, and really longer than that. Hell, man, I sat here for every day of Jay Cutler's tenure.
Yep.
Except for a few days off. And you were working for every day of that as well, right? Yeah. And we like examining that dude's psyche and trying to figure things out. But certainly in terms of scouting, like when you don't know somebody, have you learned anything in that regard? Picked up anything that you can feel like is wisdom as you're thinking about whether a team should go get somebody or not?
Yeah, because it's a dual path. You have Major League Baseball players who are humans that no one wants to hear about, right? Like, they're these ultra-talented guys that are walking lottery tickets. That's what I've always said that. Like, they've put the work in. They've obviously worked their tail off to get to the major leagues. They have a talent that we wish we had a tenth of, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But everyone else's view of it is, like, it's a 6-3 game. I don't care. Get the job done. Win, 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 win. Robot, 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 robot. And so when you talk to guys like that, and I mean, the reason, like, I think a lot of the times I've been successful in my career and forming relationships is just by talking to guys like they're you and I. Just talk to them. Because a lot of people don't. Fans, media, requests, all that stuff. People, it's just want, expect. When you go up to a guy and you ask him how he's doing, and you're not talking about baseball, it's like, wait, what? What's your intent? And it's like, nothing. I'm just asking how you're doing. Like, how's life? Like, I know you're struggling right now. Like, at least you got like married in the off season. Like,
yeah,
that's cool. And
that's hard to do sometimes.
Well, I've learned that that's a talent and a skill, and that's why there's very few people who do it, because these guys, like, psyche. That's part of figuring out a psyche of a guy is it's more than scouting.
Of course it is. It's what kind of human are they? Like, how do they relate? Because you need sort of a baseline of comfort in interpersonal relations to know that you're then going to be comfortable when you come into a new place. You got to learn a whole bunch of new stuff, and you got to rise above whatever might be difficult in order to perform well every day.
I would ask any player coming in. I mean, we know probably more than any other sport, bullpen volatility is as unpredictable as anything in sports, right? Like, you could have a stud. I always think of 2005. I always think of Cliff Polite and Neil Kotz every single time. And those guys had career years. I think ERAs of 2 flat on Polite, and Kotz was like a 1.93. Those guys, I think Polite pitched in a handful of games in 06 and retired. And Neil Kotz got traded to the north side and never had an ERA below 4, I think. I mean, it makes no sense. It doesn't. But for that year, the way it all transpired, you can't predict the bullpen itself. But then if you're talking about giving the 7th, 8th, and 9th to one of these guys that you're acquiring,
yeah,
and you think that you know them based off of a baseball reference page or the back of or what somebody said in Oakland or Chicago or Colorado, and that's all you're doing is watching a guy with a radar gun and whether or not people are chasing it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's enough. I don't. I think you need to have, you need to go deeper. And if you, if it's, if you're giving up prospects or anybody you care about,
mm-hmm.
you better know who you're handing the ball to with the lead and your $40 million manager, who he's given the ball to in the eighth inning of a pennant race in August and September.
For sure. I you know, it's a fascinating thing and something we can certainly touch on as we bring in our next guest. Jonathan Papelbon is going to join us, and looking forward to this. We have been for quite a while. Circa Sports Illinois Hotline is where we get him. Download the Circa Sports app today. Jonathan Papelbon, longtime closer in MLB for the Red Sox and the Nats and more. And you can see that, man, these days. Coming up on NESN. Jonathan, this just dropped. Welcome to the show, by the way. Thanks for doing it. Appreciate it.
Yeah, what's up, guys? How are we doing?
We're good.
We're good, man. So this news release just dropped that NESN is going to be doing like an alternate baseball broadcast for Red Sox games, and you're going to be on a couple of them with Jared Karabas coming up. So that's pretty cool. How are you enjoying media life these days?
Man, to be totally honest with you, I really do enjoy it. It took me a little while to kind of find my love for that game after I was done playing, you know, which – I do actually credit the Savannah Bananas for that, because I wanted nothing to do with baseball until I hooked up with Savannah Bananas, and my love for the game just kind of grew in a different way. And now I'm in the media, which I never thought I'd be either. And man, I just love being at NESN. Honestly, I really truly do. And you know, we're gonna do this alternate cast thing, you know, kind of like the Mannings and. You know, hopefully we're better than Michael Kay and A-Rod, you know. So, I mean, I just look forward to it. And, you know, it's a different spin. It's a new generation now, and we're trying to put that spin on it. We're going to have fun with it. Me and a guy named Jared Karabas, social media superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, yeah, like we're just trying to bring the game to a different atmosphere, to a different audience. And, yeah, we're going to have fun with it. So it's going to be fun.
That's awesome, man. I love that the Savannah Bananas brought you back to the fun. We had Vincent the Dancing Umpire on this show. That what they have going on is a pretty special thing. Did you have fun as a player, Jonathan? Did you need to have fun as a player, and did you?
As a player in the big leagues, or are we talking Savannah Bananas still?
In the big leagues, sir. When you're in the big leagues, did you have fun, and that was that a necessary part of it for you?
I had no choice but to have fun. I came up with a team. You remember a team with the 04 Red Sox?
Yeah.
Heard of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I came up shortly after the 2004 World Championship with those group of guys. So I don't think I had any kind of choice but to come up, have fun, kick some ass, and take names. You know what I mean?
Well, you certainly don't lack personality. You didn't lack personality as a player, and it's probably why you were so successful in your role as a closer, and it's going to be why you're successful in your role in the media. But we've been sitting here talking about bullpen volatility and makeup, and the Cubs have just really struggled in the 7th, 8th, and 9th trying to find a guy or find consistency. You're 11th all time in Major League Baseball in saves. I mean, you don't get there by accident. There's no such thing as an off year for a guy who finishes 11th all-time in saves. How do you get the ball in the ninth? Or when you got the ball in the ninth inning or sometimes in the eighth inning, even when you weren't feeling it, how did you manage to be that guy every single day, every single night, every single year?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, I was fortunate enough that my off year was my last year in the big league, so I didn't have time to be that off so much. But, you know, today I think the game has changed a whole lot. You know, obviously with the role of the closers, too. Now it's high leverage guy, they call them. So, you know, for me it was all about consistency, man. And I knew each and every day – that this was my job. I was going in the ninth. If we had a lead, my job was to preserve that win. And I think it's a lot harder for these kids nowadays because their roles are changing from game to game. You know, let's pitch you to seventh now because we got a guy on second and third. Let's do this differently. So consistency was my biggest thing. And obviously coming up with guys like Jason Baratek behind the plate, made all the difference in the world for me. Just because of the simple fact that he was able to show me so many things and able to teach me how to be mature in so many different ways, but yet still have fun and go out there and compete and try to win a ball game every night. But, you know, for me, the closer's role is the absolute hardest role there is. I've always said that I compare it to an NFL kicker a lot. Either you're a hero or you're a goat, and there's really no in between. You know, a starter can go out there and kind of have an okay start. Nah, you know, let's get to the next one, and you don't really hear about it. But if a closer goes out there and he's just okay and he's not good and they lose the game, you know, that rests solely upon his shoulders. So I think the mental makeup of a closer is huge, huge, huge. And I think that Theo Epstein and Terry Francona in my rookie year saw that, you know, I wanted to be a closer and I wanted to be in those situations, and those situations made me better. And sometimes they make people fold under that pressure. But for me, I think my ERA was worse in non-safe situations than they were in closer ball games. So it was a good thing for me.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it right now. It was low leverage. Your ERA was the worst of all the leverages. 100% true. Look, we know Theo Epstein pretty well around these parts after his run in Chicago. I played music with that dude. Hung out with that dude. He can admit that he's wrong every once in a while. He thought you should be a starter at first, right?
Yes. So, you know, that's the great thing about Theo. And obviously it sounds like you know Theo very well. There's no ego with Theo. Theo is a very, very smart, very precise decision maker. And when it came down to that, I think that all the analytics that we had at the time were, you know, let's get as many innings out of you as we can. But the analytics at that time really couldn't comprehend what happens at the end of a ball game. And when a manager for 75 times a year, roughly 60 to 75 times in that gap, can go to his one guy every night when I had that lead, and I know that I can count on him. You know, the analytics really didn't show that back then. So, I don't blame Theo, but I sure like to give Theo hell these days.
Well, yeah, you should. But like,
well, I do. In fact, I texted him the other day. You know, he's back with the Sox now, or I should say the FSG group, Fenway Sports Group.
Yes.
So I texted him. This is about 2 weeks ago. And I said, "Hey, man, we need to get up together and you know, have a cup of coffee during the game or something. As soon as I get done with pregame with Ness, and I'll come up to the." To the suite, let's chat, catch up, man, because we got to talk about how you screwed my career up. just messing with him.
Yeah, well, he's got to take that one.
I want to go off.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Something you were talking about earlier about closers today. You know, I look back like when you were pitching 05, 06, 07, and I see, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys with 40-plus saves. Okay? Last year, there was one. Last year, there was one in the major league. Do you think... And I don't know, what's the reason for that? Is there too much involved in the high leverage inning and analytics and not trusting that the last three outs are the most important three outs to get or the hardest three outs to get? Why has there been such a discrepancy? Because the pay is still there. I mean, we see the contracts that are going to the Josh Haders of the world and the Edwin Diazes of the world. But there's just not enough of those guys consistently cranking out 35, 40, 45 saves.
Yeah, you know, that to me is staggering too, as well. And, you know, I think really and truthfully, at the end of the day, we have turned the page on an era of baseball, truthfully and honestly. And You know, I think a lot of these saves, records, and people like your Kenley Jansen right now, who else we got? We got a Kimbrel right now that are all kind of on their way out, so to speak. The last generation of the night in, night out, ninth inning closers role. I think we are now looking at a game that is transversing into let's use that guy. It doesn't matter if it's the sixth inning or the eighth inning. If we feel like panic is starting to happen, let's bring that guy in. Which, to me, at the end of the day, what are you going to do in the ninth inning when that panic happens again? So you kind of set yourself up. So it's a double-edged sword. It's a double-edged sword. And, you know, to me, I think Major League Baseball should get back to the other. These closers come in and having six, seven of them a year with 40-plus saves. Because I don't know if you remember when I came in to drop Kick Murphy.
Yep.
It was awesome. Yeah. Sandman, Mariano, Hell's Bells, Hoffman. I mean, dude, the fans want to see that. I mean, look at the Edwin Diaz with the Timmy Trumpets guy, you know?
Yeah.
I think baseball needs to close back in that role just for pure viewership.
It's the WWE version. That's the only WWE part of baseball was the entrance and the show of the closer coming from the bullpen. And we've lost a lot of that.
It is the version of, say, the Red Sox ability to say, when we're at home and we're playing the Yankees, guess what? We got the game won, and we're bringing in our closer. Let's showboat it, run it in your face. And that's a spectacle that the fans want to see.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And even if it pisses off half the fans, that's good, too.
Who cares?
That works, too. Yeah. Jonathan, in prepping for your appearance today on the show, we went back and looked, and I'm watching young Bryce Harper in 2015 pop out on his way to an MVP season, sure. But at the time he popped out, he didn't run at all, dude. Like, just watching it again to remind myself, a couple of slow steps, he drops the bat. You feel, and then for anybody who doesn't know, you guys got into it a little bit. There might have been some hands on a throat a little bit, but you certain guys, you feel good about that. In historically, retrospectively, you feel good about your role in that dude's life at that moment.
Yes, because you know, I'll be totally honest with y'all. Look, man, there is no other player in the big leagues that I root for more than him. You know. We're done past that, but at the time, you know, it was a situation where, hell, man, we're a couple games above in the we're two games up in the NL East. I come over there from the Phillies, and it just we got to the point where guys just weren't playing. We had team meetings. Hey, let's start playing better. Let's start playing hard. Let's run everything out. Pitchers. We're not going to sit there and start thumbing up. We got to go right after guys. No more walking, guys. None of this BS. Blah, blah, blah. Well, the next night, we get that situation. And, you know, so for me, I'll be honest with you. When I was young and a rookie and had tons of swag, Jason Veritek put me in my place 10 times more than what that situation unfolded. Now, I wish it would have, like I said on Twitter, I wish it would have unfolded in a tunnel and not the dugout, right? but it is what it is, man. And shoot, I grew up with two brothers. We all played baseball. They weren't good enough to make it to AAA, but hell, it's part of the game, and it's because you care. And I think that Bryce knew that it's because I care. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, and look what kind of pro he is these days and the rest of his
career.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to take credit for that, though. I'm not going to take credit for that. But I will say that this does happen. It happened with me. Throughout your career, there's many obstacles that happen and things that happen that make you great. And I do believe that that's one of them because it was one that Veritek did for me that's great. Now, Jason Worth was a big impact in his career earlier. Zimmerman, a lot of other guys. So, I just say this, man. I root for him. In fact, last year, he kind of pissed me off, to be honest with you, because I took him when everybody last year when everybody counted the Phillies out, They were plus 1,500 to win the World Series. And I said, oh, hell no. Bryce ain't going to let that happen. And I said, I'm going to put 10,000 on. So I should have won 150,000 on them, but they lost a three-game lead somehow.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's a ride, dude, because they looked unbeatable.
They
Philly was going nuts. That ballpark, it looked like they had they had all the mojo. Did you spend it? Had you spent it already in your mind?
Well, I'll say this. I had half the bottle of drink already.
I want to ask you about something off topic that Matt and I were discussing right before you came on. And you were traded once, but we have two teams here in town that are both struggling, but one's the worst in baseball, and they have some assets that are going to be flipped here in the next month or so. When you're going out there, and not that you did this much, to be honest with you, when you're going out there and playing for a team that's just taking it on the chin night in and night out, I'm sure in the grind of things, it's not all that easy to get up to play, even though it is your job. What kind of bump or motivation, especially in the bullpen? I'm talking specifically about a bullpen arm. If a guy who appears to be struggling or is having very little success at times but great stuff can get dealt to a team that's in contention in August and September, what can that do to a reliever that maybe is not happening for a team that's up the track?
Well, I can't tell you how many times I've seen it when a guy goes from the worst team in baseball to a contender. Whoa, what? All of a sudden this guy steps up and just steps right in because of the guys around him. In baseball, it's like, it's very much like football. You are not successful unless you have the guys in front of you. A quarterback's not successful unless he has a line blocker for him, right? A closer's not successful unless he has a setup man at 6 and 7 and 8 to go ahead and get it to him. And in baseball, that seems to be noticed even more to me, because you are nobody without the guys that you go in that bullpen with. And it's a sad thing to see in Chicago right now. With both teams, I know they expected a whole lot more out of Council and a whole lot more in Chicago, but on the South side. But man, look, man.
That's how we all feel.
You just gotta ride the wave sometime, man. And you know what I do?
What do you do?
Bet against the White Sox every day.
Oh,
I just put it in. Look.
So the bottle's tasting good. The bottle's tasting good for you these days, then.
Yeah. So I hate to say it is. And even my son came up to me the other day. He was like, "Yeah, I know you take the money on the White Sox." He's like, "But that crochet guy, I wouldn't bet against him. He's pretty good."
Yeah, he's pretty.
And but look how great he is. Yet still, it is so hard for them to put together a win for that guy.
Yeah, you can't pitch nine. Nobody pitches nine. So did you bet against him the other night when he was pitching? Would it turned out just fine?
I actually didn't. So my rule, when I go on the Foul Territory podcast with your boy AJ Przinski,
yeah,
he told me, you get signed, take every game, but I wouldn't take the crochet game. So I might not even listen to him no more.
All right, yeah, exactly. All right, well, you can talk that with AJ. When you come on with us, we do Theo stories, okay? I got good ones, too.
Right.
I got good ones, so we can trade those when you come on with us, all right?
That sounds good, brother.
All right. Hey, Jonathan Papelbon, thanks, man. Thanks for doing it. Appreciate the time.
Good talking, man.
All right, you too. That's Jonathan Papelbon, who pissed a lot of people off when he was a player, and I think doesn't mind pissing people off now that he's doing media. So that's a good starting point.
It's good to have. The people who are pissed off, though, are still watching,
yeah,
still listening, still complaining.
Yeah.
Still, so, like, it's good to have both sides of the ledger.
Something meaningful's happening at 351. These guys don't even know. Talk some Bulls top of the hour here on 670 The Score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.